Hey, thanks so much for allowing me to be here with you. I've been looking forward to this. Pastor Josh, we've talked about coming for a couple of years, and finally we're able to work it out with the schedule, and I'm just thrilled to be here with you. I appreciate Pastor so much. I've followed his life and ministry ever since we were together on Word of Life Island, and he was at the Word of Life Bible Institute, family, and I love seeing young men who come along and then watch their lives and ministries and see what God does, and that's one of the greatest thrills for me. And so what a treat. And so thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time to just pull away and come here and sing songs in a key that men can sing them in, and eat wings and pizza. And I just want to know where you're all going to be at 2 o'clock in the morning. Where's the Rolaids? Who has the whatever you're going to be? Because I mean, some of you went back two, three times. I mean, it sounded like a good idea when you were at 7:45. I just don't know if it's a good idea at 2 o'clock. I couldn't do that. I already know. You know, I'm not. Who was it that said a man's got to know his limits? I know what mine are, and I can't eat the hot wings and pizza at 8 o'clock at night. So I just left it alone. But I'm glad to be here and to see you here and see some of the young people here too. I think that's really, really great. I love young people. That's the heartbeat of my ministry. I'm glad they brought the adults with them. But I love that. I want to start out tonight looking at the life of Job and talking about the godly life, and then we're going to move from there. We're going to talk about a couple of different aspects of things for men and what it looks like to be a godly man, and some things that hopefully will be a benefit for all of us. Let me say this. This retreat is not just about you. It's about me as well. My wife knows this. Every time I start to do something like this, I have to wear this in order for me to share it with you. And as I was preparing and putting these things together, it brought up some things for my own life that I had to wrestle to the ground. Matter of fact, as I was just reviewing again this evening and getting ready for this, had to wrestle some more things to the ground because this is kind of right where we live, and this whole thing with Job is big. We think of Job and the story of Job is just about, you know, crisis and tragedy, and you know, he lost everything and he got it all back, but it's really about more than that. The story of Job is really about integrity and godliness. It's about something, you know, it's not so much about affliction and crisis, although it is, as it is about someone who showed something more than that. You hear people say, you know, it takes real hardship and crisis to make, you know, a man. I beg to differ. I think that hardship and crisis just reveals the man. It reveals what has already been going on in a person's life up to that point. If there's not been something good going on up to that point, you're in trouble when the crisis comes. It doesn't make you, it reveals you. And that's what's going on in Job's life here. And so we're going to look at Job, and we're going to see in his life that he was shaken and he was found faithful. And so we want to talk about a faith that we could have in our lives, and that would be true. I want to start with a quote by Oswald Chambers. How many of you are familiar with Oswald Chambers, just that name and his devotional? Some of you, you've read that before. And all he and we're going to start with this, and then we're going to end with it. I think it's actually in your notes at the very end. We're going to start with it. He says, "I am called to live in perfect relation to God,
so that my life produces a longing after God in other lives, not admiration for myself. That's a great quote. I'm called to live in perfect relation to God so that my life produces a longing after God in other lives, not admiration for myself. So it's not about performance. It's not about somebody looks at me and goes, boy, that's I want to be like him. No, it's really about I look at you and I say, I want to be like Jesus. Okay? And so that's what this is all about. And so now what we're going to do is we're just going to look at Job's life. And as we look at Job's life, we're going to see several things about him. We're going to see, first of all, that Job was a man of faith. And as we look at this, it's kind of like a courtroom scene, all right? He's a man of faith, and as we look at him, we're in a courtroom, and there's basically three witnesses. And if you look at it this way, you've got Job, and in this courtroom, you've got the witnesses. You've got man, you've got God, and you've got Satan. And so in the courtroom, the three witnesses are ready to bear witness, and so we start with that. I don't know who said this, but someone said this, that, you know, as we think about the record of man, and as we begin with starting with the record of man in verse 1 in this courtroom, and as we think about the first one of man, we think about this. Fear, or faith, is fear that has said its prayers, somebody said. And so as we think about him being a man of faith, and we look at him and thinking about him being a man of faith, we just realize that faith is just fear that said its prayers. We look at people sometimes and say, man, they're just incredible people of faith. And maybe they're not, you know, any braver than we are. They just simply are trusting God more than we are. Maybe they're just as fearful as we are, but they're saying, okay, God, I need help. I read a story or a little illustration once about a little boy that was asked to pray, and he prayed like this. Dear God, please take care of my daddy and my mommy and my sister and my brother and my doggy and me. And oh, God, please take care of yourself. Because if anything happens to you, we're going to all be in a really big mess. The Bible starts out here in verse 1 and it says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned or eschewed, or whatever word your translation says. It's the word hated, but he hated evil. He eschewed, he hated evil. Notice some things there in his life. We see four characteristics in his life, in the life of Job. First of all, it says that he was perfect. It means this, very simply, he was blameless. He was perfect. Literally, it means without indictment. Now, I had to think about this one day because I was in a meeting today, and I sometimes feel like the Apostle Peter. I only open my mouth to change feet. Maybe some of y'all can relate to that. Some of you, you're just really cool and calm, and you just always say the right things. Sometimes I do that, and sometimes I just don't know why I say things. And I had a couple of moments like that today. And so I'm preparing this tonight, and I'm going, I got to write a couple of emails after, you know, I was going to do it, but my computer was in here. Okay, I'm just telling you, I'm being honest. And tonight after the meeting, I got to write a couple of emails and ask some guys that in the meeting today that I was in and ask them to forgive me because I wasn't blameless, okay? I didn't say anything horrid. I just said some things that shouldn't have been said. This man was without indictment. He was unaccusable. I don't know how you live like that, but I do know this. That's the way I'd like to live. I'd like to be like that. I'm not there yet, obviously. All right, I'm still in remedial class. Here's another one. He was upright, literally righteous. E.M. Blaylock said it this way. There was a certain sturdiness of character in his life. That's a great way of saying it, isn't it? A certain sturdiness of character. Thirdly, he feared God. Verse 15 says that again. When the Sabaeans had raided there and so on, it goes on, not in this one, in the next chapter, but it just talks about that he demonstrated this. Look at, as you continue reading through this chapter, when they keep coming in, not in verse 15, but when you keep coming in and bringing all these reports to him, the very first thing that he does is he demonstrates a consistent worship in his life. He feared God. He eschews evil. He shuns evil. Literally, if you compare this here in verse 5, it says that, you know, you got all these things that are going on in the life, in his life, and so on. He was very sensitive, but he hates evil. Here's a man that has, you know, he's perfect, he's upright, he fears God, he hates evil. Wow. What a man. This is a man whose life is worthy of imitation, which is the way that our lives ought to be. Now, we could stop right there and say, okay, this is we can park here and we can just look at these four things, and this would be our whole retreat for the weekend. But there's more. You know that commercial we're selling you on TV? Oh, but wait, there's more. That's kind of the way this is. That's just the record of man. Now you've got the record of God. The record of God. Then the Lord said in verse 8 to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and shuns evil?" I mean, listen, I think it would be incredible to have God say something like this, that he talked with Moses like he did, you know, at the burning bush. And then, you know, he says, you know, "You hide here in the cleft of the rock till I go by and you can see my hinder part." I think that'd be amazing. I think it'd be incredible to walk with God like Enoch did, and he was not. I think it'd be incredible to have God send his limousine for you like he did Elijah. But to have God say what he said about this man in verse 8, that would be the best. That's amazing. I just think that when we look at this and you see the record of man and now you see the record of God, gentlemen, this is a man's man. Today, the world unfortunately paints men as being loose morally and being all over the board. If they show a father on TV, he seems to be a doofus. He doesn't seem to have his act together. He can't think. He almost has to ask his kids for advice. Because that's what they're trying to paint for us from a worldly mindset. That's not what the Bible says. We're talking about a man's man. We're talking about someone here that, I mean, when this man walked in the room, everybody stopped. There's just some people that when they walk in a room, you know they walked in the room. Not because they demand you look at them, but they command that type of presence. There's just something about them. And that was this type. That was this man. See, there's so much depth of character in his life. That's where we have to start. See, I want to talk tomorrow about our own personal family devotions and all that. But listen, that's performance. That's the what we do. We have to start with the why first. Now, some of you are business people and you've read Simon, you know, Sinek and start with why. I'm not talking about it from a business perspective, although I think it's a great book. But we have to, it's all about who we are before what we do. Matter of fact, in John, Jesus is talking to the people, and as he's talking to the people, and remember when he feeds the 5,000? And as he feeds the 5,000, and he's taking care of them, and then they follow him across the Sea of Tiberias, and as they follow him, they come back and they say, hey, do it again. They liked it so much, they said, do it again. And basically, one of the truths that he teaches them there is this truth. Who I am is more important than what I do. We are so caught up today with what Jesus does, we've missed the point. The point is who he is. The point ought to be who we are. But we think it's, here's my resume. And it's more than that. It's much more than that. And I wanted to start out tonight because it's really about who we are. It's who we are at the core, on the inside. Because what is happening on the inside then ought to dictate what's happening on the outside. But unfortunately, too many times for us, and for me, I think it's from the outside trying to work inside. The outside's not going to change the inside. We see that in Romans. See, you know, be ye transformed, and you know, don't be conformed to the world, but be ye transformed. And it starts by the renewing your mind. It's an inside job, inside working out, not outside working in. It's an Old Testament and a New Testament concept. Gentlemen, Job got it. Now, I think it's also worth noticing here. Here was a man who was incredibly, incredibly in touch with God, that God would say this about him. But I also think it's important that we notice something. God did not deliver him from trouble because he was God. God delivered him in the trouble and through trouble, but he didn't deliver him from the trouble. Now, in our world today, we would have passed judgment on him. Boy, there must be something going on in his life. He must be doing something wrong. When in reality, probably it was he was doing something right. But we think if everything's not just going great in a person's life, then there's something wrong. There must be sin. There must be something in their life. Now, God knew he could trust this man. He could trust him. The record of God. Look at the next one. The record of Satan, verse 9. So Satan answered the Lord and he said, does Job fear God for nothing? See, he even knew. Satan acknowledges the accuracy of God's evaluation, but he questions Job's motives. That's all he could do. That's all he can do with us. He, you know, that's the, it's almost like, is that the best you got? I really can't change this. He really is that godly. So let me just kind of throw some doubt in there. Maybe he's really, you know, yeah, he's doing this for the wrong reason. So you've got the courtroom scene, you got man's record, you've got God's record, you got Satan's record, and they all bear witness to the fact this man really, truly is the real deal. He really is the real deal. He's a man of faith. He's a man that just has this integrity about him. He's the real deal. This is good. So as we look at our lives, when did I start? Okay, well, yeah, you gave me a time limit, so I'm going to be on my time limit.
9:15.
Okay, all right, okay. All right, well, I'm going to stop on time. If I don't finish, I'll stop. We'll just pick it up tomorrow. Okay. Sermons ought to be like baloney. You cut them off anywhere and they'll be good anyway, huh? Okay. Anyway, we'll do point one today and point two tomorrow. We have to. I get called up sometimes that I like these things. The Bible, I mean. But we got the. I mean, because this is foundational for all that we do, isn't it? I mean, can you get it? I mean, can we all get it together? That if we wrestle this to the ground. And we decided, you know what, I'm just going to work on this for who I am. And that if we had the record for ourselves, that people just looked at us and said, you know what? This guy's really walking with God. I mean, he may not be good looking, you know, he may not have all the rest of it together, but he just walks with God. I know people like that. They don't have everything in the whole world all lined up, but they just are spirit-filled people who walk with God. And I like being around them. I just like being around them. Some of them are highly educated. Some of them they didn't even finish grammar school. Doesn't matter. Some of them are business people. Some of them aren't. Some of them are this. There is no such thing as it's, you know, one size fits all. The only thing that is common with them is that they walk with God consistently, and you can tell it. Remember in Acts? They took note of them of what? That they had been with Jesus. And when you get around somebody like that, listen, here's something I found out. If you're godly, you don't have to tell anybody. By the way, converse is true too. If you're not, you don't have to tell anybody. It's real obvious. It's just real obvious. Here's the next one. Job was a man of affliction. As you follow verses 13 through 19, we'll do kind of a quick overview here. Here's what happened. He was a man of affliction. This guy, you talk about trouble. He had it. He had trouble and tragedy in his life. He had both the human element and the natural agents of trouble. The Sabaeans were a nomadic Bedouin tribe that were known for their cruelty. I mean, they were just cruel. They would just go in and capture a group of people, and then they would take these wooden stakes, and they would chop the point and make them into a point, and they would impale their enemies on them, or even they didn't have to be enemies, just people they didn't like, and they'd just impale people on them, and they would just put them out in the hot sun and just leave them there writhing in pain because that's what they like to do. They would bury them up to their necks and then put fire ants all around them just because that's how cruel they were. I mean, and on and on and on. I won't even tell you the bad things they did. I mean, that was the nice things they did. They were cruel. There was fire from heaven. There was the Chaldeans, another nomadic band that was later conquered by Babylon. There was the wind. He lost his family. He lost his friends. He lost his wealth. He had trouble. But not only was there trouble and tragedy, but there was also a trust and a triumph. A trust and a triumph. Look at Job's response to tragedy. There's a couple of things that you see in his life. Actually, there's three things that you see that happen in Job's life. You ready? When he was faced with trouble and tragedy, you see a trust and a triumph. There's three things that he did. Look at verse 20. What did he do in verse 20? Verse 20 says, "Then Job arose, and he rent his mantle, and he shaved his head, and he fell down upon the ground, and he worshiped." When we have crisis and hardship in our life, is the first thing we do worship? Or is it we run around and scream and cry and moan and groan and crawl everybody and tell them how terrible life is? He worshiped. I mean, you talk about somebody who had a little different perspective on life. Warren Wiersbe said it this way: "Worship puts God where he deserves to be and keeps man where he ought to be." That's good. Worship puts God where he deserves to be and keeps man where he ought to be. And see, in the middle of crisis, in the middle of tragedy, worship really is the only proper response. But it prompts me to ask, what is my first response to crisis? It's not necessarily, God, I just want to worship you. I mean, I remind you again, crisis does not make a person, it reveals a person. And the reason he worshiped was not because, wow, crisis came into his life and, oh, this makes me into a great Christian. No, crisis came into his life and it revealed that he was a great man of God. He worshiped. The second thing it says in verse 21, and he said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. The second thing he did was he trusted. He just trusted. God, you know what? I didn't have anything when I started, and I don't have anything now. Okay, fine. A godly man lives in such a way that his life beautifies the gospel. He makes Jesus beautiful and the gospel attractive to others outside. I don't know what you how you feel about Johnny Erickson Tata. I actually don't care. I can tell you this much. If I had gone through what she had gone through, I would have no way of having the attitude she has. I just read that she's got a book that just was released a couple of years ago. And after all these years of being a quadriplegic, she's now going through additional crisis in her life and hardship. I don't know. I just don't know how I'd face that. And yet she still has this attitude of gratitude in her life. And I'm going, I don't know how. But her life beautifies the gospel and makes it attractive. I tell you this, as I was reading through the book, it made me so ashamed. It literally, I'm going, I am such a baby. I mean, in here, guys, listen, I felt like I had lace on my underwear. Literally, okay? I just thought, what a sissy I am. When I had young in the ministry, and Jack Wurtson had Johnny come and speak the word of life at a rally we had, and we were staying up at the Word of Life Inn, and she was in the same lodge like this, and stayed in the room next door to where I was staying, and there was someone there helping her. Of course, she's actually married, and I just remember that during that week, just watching all she was going through, and I was just blown away. That was, because I've been with Word of Life now, in June, 40 years. That was over 35 years ago. And I've done all the things I've done, and she's been in a wheelchair for that 35 years and had already been in it for several years before that. And she's still got this sweet spirit. I don't know. And that's Job. He just trusted. Here's the next thing he did. In verse 22, in all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. He remained pure. He remained pure. How many of you would know the name Dr. Ray Pritchard? Some of you know that name. A couple of you do. Dr. Ray Pritchard speaks at Word of Life a lot. He's a dear friend of mine. Ray and I went to school together. We had several classes together. Which was a terrible thing because Ray is smart and I'm not. We had Greek together and he actually understood it. And so he just, he was just one of those smarty people that you didn't want to be in class with. But Ray's just a good friend. We're both from Alabama. He was from the smart part of Alabama. I wasn't. But Ray's an author and a speaker. He's written many, I think, close to 30 books, but Ray wrote a book, and I want to recommend this book to you to get. It's called A Man of Honor. Excellent book. I'm going to refer to it a couple of times during the weekend. A Man of Honor. In that book, he said this, and I just think it's interesting. He said he's talking about a godly man. He said he was tough when he could have been weak. He was tender when he could have been harsh. He was thoughtful when he could have been hasty. He was trusting when he could have been doubted. He was temperate when he could have indulged himself. Again, speaking about a godly man. Very, very good book. I encourage you to get it. It's not a new book. It's an older book, but excellent book. Martin Luther said there are three things that were necessary for making a minister. He said there were three things were this: prayer, meditation, and temptation. Referring to the last one, he meant resisted and conquered. And that's true for all of us, not just a minister in the sense of a preacher, you know, Pastor Josh or someone. All of us, there are three things. We need to all meditate. We need a prayer, meditation, and temptation resisted and conquered. So here we've got that he worshiped, he trusted, and then he remained pure. He remained pure. So when we think about this man, this man was just an incredible, incredible man. And so as we think about him, third thing, last thing, I think I'll be able to finish tonight. I think we'll be okay. All right? We'll be in the time limit too. Here's the last thing. All right? Third thing, Job was a man of integrity. Integrity. Not going to put this quote up there, but let me just read it to you. Dr. Warren Wiersbe again said this: integrity, and he has a great book on integrity, if you've not read that. The whole book's on integrity. Integrity is to personal or corporate character what health is to the body, or 20/20 vision is to the eyes. A person with integrity is not divided, that's duplicity, or merely pretending, that's hypocrisy. He or she who is whole, life is put together and things that are working harmoniously. People with integrity have nothing to hide and nothing to fear. Their lives are open books. People with integrity have nothing to hide and nothing to fear. Their lives are open books. People who don't have integrity, every time the phone rings, they just know they've been caught. See, you have the record of God after the affliction. In chapter 2, in verse 3, listen, there is still trouble to come. He's not done yet. He's going to lose his health, but his response is the same. Listen to this. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant, my friend," literally, Job, "that there is none like him on the earth, a perfect and an upright man who feareth God and escheweth evil, and who still holds fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause?" That's wow. Who holdest fast his integrity? Wow. This is the third time this statement has been made about Job. The third time. The same as before, except God adds this: he holds fast his integrity. See, Job refused to be a victim. Listen to the clarity here. A victim says, "Why did this happen to me?" But a student, a person with integrity, says, "What can I learn from this?" A victim blames others for his problems. A student says, "How much of this did I bring on myself?" A victim looks at everyone else and cries, "Life isn't fair." A student looks at life and says, "What happened to me could happen to anybody." A victim believes hard times comes because God is trying to punish him. A student understands that God allows hard times in order to help him grow. A victim would rather complain than find a solution. A student has no time to complain because he's busy making the best of his situation. A victim feels so sorry for himself that he has no time for others. A student so focuses on helping others that he has no time to feel sorry for himself. A victim begs God to remove all the problems of life so he can be happy. A student has learned through the problems of life that God alone is the source of true happiness. Guys, when we have integrity in our lives, we don't have time to be a victim. We're too busy being focused on our relationship with God and our relationship with other people. But when we don't have integrity in our lives, all the world revolves around me. And see, Job had integrity, so he didn't have time for that. Here's the kicker, though, okay? I come in here, I know some of you, I've seen some of you around, you know, we had prayer a moment ago, and we were talking about every time, where's Mark? He said, every time I see you, you're about to speak. So all he knows about me is that I speak, okay? And I do that a lot. But if you really want to know who I am, if you go out down the hall to the last room on the right, there's a lady in that room that's my wife. She came with me because that was the condition of me coming because today is her birthday. And she agreed that she agreed we could do this. And we're going to say, we're going to celebrate it. But if you really want to know who I am, ask her. And if you're married, you can come in here and you can fool me and you can fool everybody all weekend. But if I really want to know who you are and you're married, I just ask your wife. Because that's the acid test. Or ask your kids. Or if you're not married, I'll just ask your friend or your coworker or the person that's around you the most. You know? It's like, you know, my kids one day when they were young, and I remember I was sitting in my room and my son was walking down the steps and my daughter was going up steps. And my daughter said to my son, "Where are you headed?" She said, and he said, "I'm going to see Dad." And she said, "I wouldn't do that right now. He's not in a good mood." So that's, you know, they know us better than anybody else. So that's why this one I think is so important: the record of his wife after the affliction. See, this is the one. This is the one that really see. His wife in verse chapter 2 and verse 9, the acid test. "Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity?" Why don't you just curse God and die? Why are you doing this? Why are you still living like this? I don't get it. See, he was a man of integrity, and his wife was close to him. She would have known him. She would have known the real deal, wouldn't she? I mean, if I was a friend, I just came over and visited and said, "Hey, how's it going?" He said, "Oh, brother, I'm so good. If I had to be two of me if I was any better." You know, all those Christian cliches we throw out. But see, after I leave, she's still there. She knows what it's really like. And she said, "Why are you continuing to live with integrity like this? This guy's the real deal." You know what her solution was? It's the same as the world's. Why? Just get over this. Stop. I love Job's response to his wife. "But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh." He not only had integrity, he had guts. Either that or he could run fast, one of the two. "What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" Wow, what a balanced perspective. "And all this did not Job sin with his lips." He told her, "You're talking..." Okay, and you probably don't like this, okay, but the paraphrase, the message says this: "You're talking like an empty-headed fool. We take the good days from God, why not take the bad also?" Thomas A. Kempis said this: "The glory of good men is their conscience and not the mouths of men." See, we have to understand something. when it's all said and done, we have to live with our conscience and knowing that we have pleased God and we have to do what is right in His sight. The Sunday school teacher was leading a conversation with her little class of boys and girls, and she was talking to them about saints. And she was asking the children if they knew what saints were, and the children were all trying to figure it all out, and finally one of the little boys raised his hand and he said, "Yes, I know what saints are." And she said, "What are saints?" And he was thinking about their church and how they had stained glass windows in their church, and he said, "I know what the saints are." He said, "The saints are those people that the sun shines through." And I thought about that, and I thought, you know what? That's what saints are. We're all saints. We're just the people that the light shines through. And see, if we have integrity and we really are walking with God, we ought to just be those people that the sun, S-O-N, is shining through. I go back to Oswald Chambers. "I am called to live in perfect relation to God so that my life produces a longing after God in other lives. Not admiration for myself." I'm called to be that window, if you would, that the light shines through. And it draws men. If I be lifted up, I will draw men. See, we need to just point other people to the cross. We need to point other people to the risen Savior. We need to be the one that the light is shining through. But it goes back to the fact that we have to be, first of all, we have to work on the inward man. And once we work on the inside, then there's something that starts happening and we start living it out. I think that if we just started working on verse 1, "He was blameless, upright, feared God, hated evil." We could park there, work on that for a while, and see what God would do in our lives. I know for me, as I was preparing this, that was a challenge for me. And maybe it will be for you as well. Tomorrow morning, we'll continue. And I've got notes for each session. And tomorrow morning, we'll continue. I want to talk tomorrow. It's one thing to talk about having something going on the inside. In order for that to be true, we have to know how to grow in our personal walk with God. All of us have had somebody say, you know, "You ought to read your Bible, you ought to memorize Scripture, you ought to pray, you ought to do this, you ought to do that." We all had that happen. But how do you get a godly habit into your life? How do you do that? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, and we've all said, okay, I'm gonna start and I'm gonna pray more, or I'm gonna memorize Scripture, or I'm gonna read my Bible through. And we just started, you know, a new year, and some of you made a commitment to read your Bible through, and you got started, and somewhere in Genesis or Exodus or Leviticus, you got lost, you know, in the weeds, and or whatever. But we all have started with a whole thing of a new godly habit. How do you get a godly habit into your life? Tomorrow morning, I'd like to do a session with you that is, there's no secret. It's not five steps to being a godly person or getting a habit in, but it's a real practical, very, very practical, down-to-earth session on how to get a godly habit from concept to the point where it's actually a part of your life. And I've got notes on that, and we'll just walk through that in the morning, at first thing. And we'll take some time with that. So that's where we're going. I wanted to talk about the foundation, first of all, that this is what we need. And when I say we, I'm not talking about, okay, I got a frog in my pocket. Okay, I'm talking about we. We need, this is real for every one of us, and I mean this for myself. I cannot function without this, and you can't function without this. And gentlemen, if we as men don't lead the way, it's not going to happen. Our churches are not going to make it. We can't let the women keep doing it, and our young men in the churches need leaders, and they need to see us do that. And then we need to lead the way when it comes to the godly habit. I brought some books with me. I brought some quiet time, some journals. We're going to talk about that and about leading family devotions and having quiet time. Some of you are already doing that. I brought some. I'm going to sell them at a ridiculous price if you're interested in them. And if you're not, I'm not here just to sell books, but I did bring some in case some of you wanted to have a tool to go back with. And if you can't afford them, if you will tell me, I'll figure out a way to give them to you. Okay? It's just that simple. I'll go back and tell Word of Life that I gave them to you. I'll figure out something because I want you to have some tool in your hand to help get in the Word of God. Okay? And I just want to help. And because I think this is vital that we leave here not just having filled in the blanks, but we leave here with that we've jump-started something, and that we leave here knowing we started something. Okay? And if there's something I can do to help with that, I don't want to just come and do a weekend and then you walk out here and go, well, that was good. No, let's leave here knowing that something changed. Okay? Okay, Pastor.